Hi, I'm Tatiana J. Whitelord. I'm the president and founder of Intelligent Brand Extension and an attorney and solicitor, and you're listening to IP Fridays.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of IP Fridays. Our names are Ken Suzanne and Rolf Clayson, and this is the podcast dedicated to intellectual property. It does not matter where you are from, in-house or private practice, novice or expert. We will help you stay up to date with current topics in the fields of trademarks, patents, design and copyright, discover useful tools, and much more.
Welcome to episode number 30. Our shows have been downloaded over 20,700 times, and last month we had 2,630 downloads. That makes us very happy. Thank you for listening and being loyal listeners to our show. Today our special guest is Tatiana J. Whitelord, and she tells us about a new business model for IP lawyers. So stay tuned, this is really cool, at least I thought that. But before that, Ken is telling us about unsolicited mass text messages and the legal implications of Periscope. So Ken, why don't we start with Periscope?
Rolf, social media is an agent for change. People, companies, and brands have found ways to incorporate social media into almost every aspect of life. Popular apps such as Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat allow users to easily share pictures and videos of their lives. The new Twitter-based app Periscope now allows users to stream live video for the world to see, and this is relatively new ground for the social media space. Since Periscope is one of the newly launched live video streaming services, the company is bound to run into some legal troubles. Legal issues stemming from live streaming apps can range from copyright infringement to invasions of privacy. Like many people, celebrities enjoy their privacy. Live streaming a celebrity can potentially open up doors for the celebrity to sue whoever is filming them without consent. Using a live video stream with advertising present and a celebrity can also land you in trouble. A-list actress Katherine Heigl had a $6 million lawsuit with Walgreens because they tweeted a picture of her without her consent. Given that this proceeding focused on a photograph, imagine the issues connected with a live video broadcast worldwide. The popular hit TV show Game of Thrones recently had its season premiere, and during that performance, there were allegedly Periscope users who were rebroadcasting the show via their Periscope feeds, putting copyright rights to a test. Periscope claims that they will shut down every account that attempts to illegally stream. More specific regulations and laws will likely be in the works to keep this app running smoothly without copyright troubles. Periscope was again in the spotlight during the widely aired fight between Pacquiao and Mayweather. Periscope received some negative attention due to fans that were at the fight streaming it live via the app. People pay considerable money to watch these fights either in person or on demand. Periscope states that they are not responsible for content that is posted, and it is all under the discretion of the user. Periscope's terms of service notes, "We do not endorse, support, represent, or guarantee the completeness, truthfulness, accuracy, or reliability of any content or communications posted via Periscope or endorse any opinions via Periscope." Meerkat, another video streaming app similar to Periscope and located in Israel, is likely to face similar issues and potential scrutiny. Periscope opens many doors to the social media world and is bound to gain popularity in the coming years. Watch for possible challenges to the app's services and or changes in the law to accommodate this new way for people to interact in real time on the internet.
So carefully think about what you're doing with Periscope, right? Ken, you also had an interesting story about unsolicited text messaging by the Navy.
Rolf, unsolicited text messages and phone calls are usually not welcomed. Some may wonder if sending automated messages without consent is legal or illegal. The advertising agency Campbell Ewald is now making an attempt to fend off a class action lawsuit over accusations that the company sent a mass text on behalf of the United States Navy. Under the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, it is illegal to make a call or send a message using an automated system without consent. The text message at issue was sent to around 100,000 recipients with the phrase, "Destined for something big, do it in the Navy." The advertising agency offered to settle the case, but the offer was not accepted. The Ninth Circuit ruled in last September that the case could proceed forward despite an offer to settle the claims for $1,500 per violation. The advertising agency has appealed to the United States Supreme Court. It is unknown whether this advertising agency was aware that it was against the law to send the unsolicited text messages. Under the federal statute, a consumer can recover up to $500 for each violation per call, and up to $1,500 per call if the consumer can establish that the caller violated the federal statute knowingly and willfully. There is a $500 penalty for each message that was sent. If you multiply $500 by 100,000, that adds up to a hefty fine. Past cases that are similar include Papa John's Pizza, who faced a $250 million spam lawsuit when they sent 500,000 unsolicited messages. That case settled for $16.5 million. The United States Navy is not a party to the case. The appeal is pending at the United States Supreme Court, and oral arguments are due in the next term, which will begin in October and end in June 2016.
Thank you, Ken. So now it's time for our special guest today. And I had the chance to interview Tatiana during the Inter meeting in San Diego.
I'm very excited to be joined by Tatiana J. Whitelord. Today, she is owner and founder of Intelligent Brand Extension LLC in New York. And her business is catering to mid-cap companies, well-funded mid-cap companies, as well as startup companies. And her specialty is that she is not only consulting regarding trademarks, but also finding the connection to the business side of things. So thank you very much for being on the show, Tatiana.
Thank you, Rolf. It's a pleasure to be here.
So how would you define today's innovation scene, and how does it differ from 10 years ago?
The innovation scene has changed considerably today. I think 10 years ago, if you had this kind of innovation, a lot of companies, groups, and even practitioners, professionals would be somehow cynical. And today it's so proliferant that actually big companies are creating groups just dedicated to innovation, whether inside or outside of the groups. And then they are investing in startups. They're investing in incubators. They're, that in itself is a tremendous change because they know that they won't survive. And then I think on the individual side, more and more entrepreneurs are being introduced to the market every day, and people have phenomenal ideas. And some of them are very viable, some of them less viable. And then there are also a lot of vehicles for funding. There are a lot of new venture capital firms, a lot of new smaller firms that not only cater to innovation on the technology side, but also innovation on the brand side. People around the world are very creative these days. So definitely I would think that in terms of innovation, we have probably tripled what we had 10 years ago as availability in the market.
So you would say innovation is done probably mostly in the small companies who are really innovative. They are just bought up by the large corporations. Is that a trend that you are seeing?
It's a trend, but what we're seeing also is that the larger companies are creating almost entire setups of innovation people. And previously, innovation, certainly during the times that I was counsel for some of the larger companies in the world, innovation was an integral part of marketing, but it was a small part of marketing. Today, innovation is a standalone element. That there are massive resources dedicated to innovation even within big groups, and part of that resource is to go and find startups and invest in them.
Right. Before the interview, you told me that legal and marketing can actually go hand in hand, especially for startups. And it's not uncommon at the moment that, for example, marketing people ask the lawyers if they can use a certain name for a product or so. But you say that you have something different in mind. Explain.
Yes. I think what we have in mind is something more complete. Certainly what one has seen historically, probably, you know, most of your users and subscribers, whether on the legal side or on the business side, will always say that, you know, that if you're outside counsel, you're not really involved in the business marketing strategy of the company. So they come to you with just an end result, and all you do is implement without being involved at an early stage on what can and cannot be done. And if you're in-house counsel, they involve you too late.
Mm-hmm.
What we try to do is fill that gap from the beginning. So in other words, there is a way, certainly, particularly when you talk about, you know, innovation and startups, there is a need for legal advice and marketing and business strategy to be combined at the outset, because these companies need, you know, they need to protect their IP, they need to protect their innovation, they need to structure themselves correctly, but they also need marketing strategy to coherently penetrate the market that they're going after, and to know their competition and to have a new offering. So if these two don't go hand in hand, there's a disconnect. So what we have attempted to do is to gap that disconnect. And I think nowadays we're increasingly seeing the benefit of, you know, the legal community and the marketing and business community to talk together continuously and to talk together and to be able to work together, if I may say, more cohesively.
Mm-hmm. So you actually want the clients to come to you and find you before they write the marketing plan, basically.
Yes.
And on a very early stage. So how do you educate your clients to come to your office or to call you, you know, at such an early stage? How do you do that?
Well, I mean, I think what we pride ourselves in is, and that's thanks to the marketing side and the business strategy side of our business. Because in the end, we are strategists. That's what we're really strong at. And we pride ourselves in being able to identify what's missing. So whoever comes to us within the first couple of conversations, we're pretty much able to identify whether they're not going in the right direction, or they are going too far in the wrong direction, and so we try and show them what is needed and how it's needed by simply, you know, studying what they're doing. A lot of work goes into actually studying the brand or the technology or anything that it is, in order to be able to provide them even, you know, our thoughts on what the next step should be. And that's often what they really like, that, you know, we really delve into it before they even become clients.
Oh, that's really interesting. I mean, it's really difficult to grasp the ideas of the client before they are even aware of some of the ideas that you might
exactly
present to
them. That's I think what they like, that, you know, the type of companies that we deal with are certainly very fast, very evolving, lots of new ideas, but they're oftentimes not the most structured companies.
Exactly.
In terms of strategy particularly.
Exactly.
You know, so there's a lot going on, but if you think about it, there are silos.
Mm.
So they're going all over the place, but if you ask them about, you know, the big picture and the long-term picture, they know what it should be, but the A to Z, everything between A and Z, or some of it, is missing.
Right.
And we can see that because that's our experience.
You take them by the hand.
And we take them by the hand. We take them by the hand so that they can then go and do what they like to do, which is busy and go and create and innovate and, you know, buy other companies and whatever it is that they do, and not have to worry about all of those details that we're good at.
Right. You know? So I assume that in your day-to-day experience, there's some advice that you give again and again, you know, always the same things. What are the top five mentioned things that you tell your startup clients?
I think the startup clients definitely have to be create a solid structure, a solid legal structure from the beginning. Protect your IP. It doesn't matter who says what. Ultimately, what you're selling is your IP. So protect it. Clarify your offer. Define your target and focus your efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So don't go on tangents. You know, the world mm-hmm. is a big place.
Right.
But only part of it is relevant to what you're doing.
Right.
So if you're properly protected, if you've got the right strategy in terms of your IP, and if you focus and you target and you define your business and where it's going, then you're doing a good job.
Can we dive into clarifying the target? Because that seems to be something that I also see with my startup clients that I have that is sometimes overlooked. You
yes.
know, some of the clients, they just have this great idea and they say, okay, we have to market this and this is the marketing plan and we can have break even in 2 or 3 years and whatever. But the real goal or the target is missing. Is the target selling the company in 10 years? Is
yes.
the target being a market leader in the field in 20 years or in 3 years? Or what is actually the target? So how do you get the clients to think about this? And are there any methods that you use to, you know, take them by the hand and identify the target?
Yes, we actually, and this is interesting that you should say that, because we're obviously, you know, we're headquartered in New York, but we're global and we cater to clients from around the world. We've got, you know, clients from Europe, from Australia, from the US, from, you know, South America, and many other places. And they all have this problem. Whoever, you know, wherever the startup is from, interestingly, they have exactly that problem.
Exactly.
And what they think their target is and what we make them understand or see what their target is at the end of the exercise are generally different. And usually we work through, actually, you know, we have to do a workshop with them where we basically get, you know, the most relevant people of the client firm, whether it is just, you know, one person, 10 people, whoever it is, into a room for about 2 or 3 days. And we really, really make them think about a certain number of things. So a lot of work. It usually takes us about at least 2 or 3 weeks to prepare for the workshop. Then it's about a two to three day, depending on the complexity. And then it's another good month to 2 months of creating the document that becomes essentially their Bible for that particular target.
Yeah,
and,
very good.
And then we manage the process with them so
mm-hmm.
that they don't, you know, there are no mishaps, because a lot of the times, because we're not implementers, we have, you know, a collective of very good implementers who work with us. But if the client prefers to work with another service provider, we're okay with that. But a lot of the times they will say, well, please manage them for us, because we have to be sure that they follow the strategy that leads us to the target.
Right.
So yes, to answer your question, there are, I wouldn't say formulas, but there are certainly a very specific kinds of questions that lead you to defining what your target is.
Right. So if people want to get in touch with you, what would be the easiest way?
Anything, really. They can call me, they can email me, they can look on our website.
So your website is?
www.ibrandx, simple. Letter I, the word brand, letter X.com. And we're here. We'd love to talk to anyone. Everyone comes to us probably because they've heard about us or they've read us or something. And usually they like what we offer because we like to listen to them.
Right. Thanks for being on the show, Tatjana.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
That's it for this episode. If you liked what you heard, please show us your love by visiting ipfridays.com/love and tweet a link to this show. We would be so grateful if you would do that. It would help us out to get the word out. Also, please subscribe to our podcast at ipfridays.com or on iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you have a question or want to be featured in one of the upcoming episodes, please send us your feedback at ipfridays.com/feedback. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes. You can go to ipfridays.com/iTunes, and it will take you right to the correct page on iTunes. If you want to get mentioned on this podcast or even have comments within the next episode, please leave us your voicemail at ipfridays.com/voicemail. You have been listening to an episode of IP Fridays. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, their respective law firms. None of the content should be considered legal advice. The IP Fridays podcast should not be construed as legal advice or legal opinion on any specific facts or circumstances. The contents of this podcast are intended for general informational purposes only, and you are urged to consult your own lawyer on any specific legal questions. As always, consult a lawyer or patent or trademark attorney. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved.